You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I'm joined in the studio right now with Julie and Jenta from the Green Party, Jacinda Ardern from the Labour Party, and Jeff Simmons from the Opportunity Party. Hi, everyone.
Kia ora.
Hi, kia ora.
Yeah, I can hear you all. Great. All right, I'm just going to move my own mic. Sorry, everyone. Let's get into it then. So we're going to hold a little panel discussion at the moment for the Mount Albert by-election. If you've got anything to say throughout this next discussion, text into 5395 and let us know what you're thinking. I guess we'll just start off by talking about transport in the Mount Albert electorate. So do you think the public transport system currently is working in the electorate? We'll start with you, Julie.
It is a lot better than it used to be, and it's working pretty well. Certainly talking to people door knocking, they've appreciated the improvement to the railway stations, the electrification of the rail line. Buses are getting better, but it still could be so much better. Mm. The buses themselves are basically old diesel buses, and we should be running electric or hybrid buses at this point. We should have more separated cycleways, more safe routes around schools with lower speed limits, and the City Railing is going to improve the frequency of trains along the train or along the rail line, but there needs to be a whole lot more investment in some of those level crossings as the frequencies increase. So it's good, it could be a lot better, and it could be a lot more affordable. We campaigned on the student green card last time, which is free off-peak transport for tertiary students, and I think that would really help out a lot of people who are living in that area going to uni.
Yeah, definitely. Jacinda?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with Julianne that we have seen some improvements, but there is so much more that we could do. I mean, for example, I've really found when you're kind of door knocking around the Mount Albert Oiraka area, they're talking about, you know, bus links that take you across the electorate rather than having to go all the way in the city to make those connections. So I think that's where there's really a gap, and we'd be keen to work with council in partnership. It's something the government hasn't been great on, particularly to co-fund some of those bigger projects. So, for example, light rail from the city all the way down through Dominion Road is something we've said, look, we're going to pay 50% of a project like that, some council with the rest, and eventually we want to see that linking through to the airport. So on major infrastructure, it's really important, I think, that central government acknowledges that there's a bit for us to do as well as locally for council to pitch in.
Yeah, and Jeff?
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. And the thing with those big projects is that the government doesn't evaluate them all on a level playing field on a like for like basis. So the issue with roading in particular is that all of the money within that budget goes into building roads rather than looking at whether rail or other forms of transport might be a bit of return on investment.
Yeah, and I mean, because Labour obviously has proposed to introduce light rail from Mount Roskill into the city. Would you also see this
just
as
on the Mount Albert electorate border, helpfully?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Would you see this as maybe possibly being a priority for other suburbs in the Mount Albert electorate, like even maybe Westmere, or would that be a possibility? We'll start with you, Jacinda.
Yeah, and we've talked about light rail around the Isthmus and really linking in those suburbs, but I think there really is a bit of a black hole when you get down to that area of Auckland, and so that's why it was a real priority for us. But you can see, you know, the way that, for instance, there was a debate around what would happen with the Outer Link, which is a bus that I use that comes past my neck of the woods. You know, I think that really speaks to the fact that what people want is frequent, they want reliable, they want identifiable, and so if we can build in more of those bus links for people around that part of the isthmus, then that would be fantastic.
Yeah, Julie?
All of the suburbs in Mount Albert actually originally developed along electrified tramway lines and the railway lines, and you can really see it, and that's part of what contributes to the great character of those neighborhoods. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be looking at reintroducing trams where it makes sense. As Jeff pointed out, we need a more logical approach to evaluating transport investment for that to happen, and for that you need a change of government.
Yeah. Jeff, did you have anything to add on the light rail or anything?
Oh, well, I mean, whether or not Westmere is the best place, I mean, it really depends where the densification is going to happen first. And, you know, so we need some sort of planning around that, which I think to give credit to the government, they are starting to talk about with these urban development authorities. But knowing where that densification is going to happen so we can get the transport in place now so that people don't have to buy cars and clog up the roads.
Yeah. Cool. I just wanted to also touch on education. So some of the biggest schools in Auckland are in this electorate, and their roles are increasing more and more every year. If elected, how would you support the school's growth? Jacinda, we'll start with you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, two of the biggest primary schools in the area are in Mount Albert. And I think part of the thing we've been worried about is that actually we should have been able to anticipate that kind of growth. Right. You know, when your median age is 33, you can make a few assumptions about what might be happening down the track for those families. So the Ministry of Education has this pot of funding that was meant to go into those schools that were having that rapid growth. They've underspent it. Right. And they've underspent it while schools like, for instance, Balmoral have two prefabs that are in such bad shape that the Ministry of Education has dumped on their playing fields that they can't be used. So it seems criminal to me that schools like that haven't got the infrastructure they need while this funding is sitting there underspent. We need to plan better, and the purpose of that is so you can get your class sizes down. If you don't have enough classrooms, then that's impossible.
Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, our education policy is actually being released on Sunday at Mount Albert Grammar School, but what I'd say in general is that the idea of education since the 1980s is that individual schools compete, and that's just crazy. It hasn't worked anywhere in the world. It hasn't improved things, and so we'd like to see that gone, and schools working together more to deal with these sort of planning and regional kind of issues.
Julie, did you have anything to add?
I agree with what they've said. I think we're expecting a lot of population growth within the existing urban area in Auckland, including the Mount Albert electorate, and I just feel central government isn't on top of planning for the additional social infrastructure that we need to support that, like inner city schools and health services as well. I mean, parks. And there's all sorts of social and physical infrastructure that actually needs to be planned for, and some of that, in the case of education and health, is down to central government, and they just don't seem to be paying attention.
Yeah, and just even going past, role increase, are there any sort of other priorities you have for education in the Mount Albert electorate?
Some of them come down to national issues. So, for instance, we really want to ease the path into the next stage of education. Labour in the past have always been the ones that have said, look, actually, we need to move into compulsory free state education up to secondary school. Well, the next phase for us is that actually going beyond secondary school, trying to make your tertiary education, be it university or polytech, more accessible. One way we can do that, and it is just one, is things like 3 years free tertiary education. So that's a really big part of our education policy, but also acknowledging that actually the amount that you can access via living costs via a student loan is capped at a ridiculous rate. It doesn't cover costs of living, particularly if you're a student studying in Auckland, and we really need to look at that as well.
I think the issue with the tertiary issues that Jacinda's talking about is when you look at who ends up at university, it tends to be middle class people, and those issues go right back to early childhood. So actually the big return on investment is in the early childhood area, and that's what the Opportunities Party will be focusing on.
Julie?
It doesn't have to be either or. I think, we used to provide free tertiary education. We can still make a big early childhood education a big priority so that people have more opportunities. But I think fundamentally in the 21st century, a country has to be investing in education across the board. That's one of the best ways that we're going to be able to lift wages, lift incomes, and respond to the challenges of the 21st century.
But doing everything, Julianne, is expensive. Have to have priorities.
Is it? Yes, we do have to have priorities. But,
if we're going to match the challenges of the future of work, the fact that 46% of our current service kind of industry jobs are going to go through automation, then actually, yes, EC, early childhood's really important, but so is ongoing training and education. We need to take an approach that actually all of us for our whole lives will be dipping in and out of education, retraining as we go if we're going to be a high-wage economy. So I don't think we can treat education as if it has an end point. So that, I think, does mean that post-secondary is important too.
I absolutely agree with that. The question there is tertiary fit for purpose in its current form to be able to do that lifelong learning? And I think there's some really big questions there.
Moving on to housing. So as of 2014, around 9,400 people in the Mount Albert electorate don't own their own homes. Is this something you're planning to address, Julie?
I think that housing needs to be addressed across the board. So the first step would actually be protecting renters better, ensuring there's a warrant of fitness for rental properties, that there's proper security of tenure, because making it better and more secure for renters is part of what we need to do ensure that people have access to affordable, secure housing. And then in terms of the rest of it, first home buyers, obviously, we need to crack down on speculators. We need to fix our tax system so we're not incentivizing overinvestment in property. Limiting foreign investment into property will help reduce the inflation that we've seen over the last few decades. And we need more supply. And I think that there's a really important role for the public sector to play in building and providing that new supply in a long-term way. And so coordinated neighborhoods that have all of the services people need, not just subdivisions full of housing that developers are building to maximize their profit.
Jacinda?
I mean, housing has become such an important part of the debate locally, and for good reason. It affects absolutely everything. Mm. If you're spending over 30% of your disposable income, which, you know, so many people in Auckland are, on just putting a roof over your head, it limits, you know, your ability to participate in your community, the quality of life that you have. And so it's right that we're prioritising this issue. 40% of people in Mount Albert are renting, though, and over the last 8 years, their rents have gone up by 40%. It's extreme. So we want to make sure that while people are renting, that we are both focused on looking at the way the Residential Tenancy Act, you know, doesn't really support them right now, so we can give a bit more stability. And that's something we're doing, we want to do in the lead up to the election. But I don't want to give up on the dream of those people owning. And Julianne's right, it's about supply and demand. We've got to ban foreign overseas buyers. They make up roughly 13% of our market in terms of purchases. We've got to put a stop
to
that.
How do you know that?
The data that the government's put out, they only looked at a limited match of the buyers, but even from the data they put out, it roughly looks at about 13%.
Right.
But and even then, their data's a bit sketchy. And we also want to close the loophole around negative gearing. You know, those speculators who are writing off against income, over $600 million worth of possible tax. And also a bright line test. So taxing speculators who flick off a home within 5 years of buying it, just to dampen down that demand. But actually, ultimately, we just need to build houses.
Mm.
We need to build houses at scale. And Labor has done it before. We will do it again because the market has failed and it's time that we stepped in.
Jeff?
So our message to renters is that under the current tax system, people who own property are favoured and people who rent get hammered. So actually, our policy levels that playing field. Renters will be vastly better off under the Opportunities Party policy than any other party's policies. So that's the first thing, actually levelling that playing field and giving renters a big leg up. The other issue that these guys are talking about is supply, and I totally agree that supply is an issue, but the contention here is whether the private sector or public sector have to do it. We don't see this as a public sector job to build houses. The reason that houses are not being built is because under the current tax system, developers are better off not building houses. They're better off land banking and sitting on the land. You have to remove that incentive, make it unprofitable for them to sit on that land, which is what our tax policy will do, and then we'll see houses being built.
Just to get into the specifics of the electorate, would you have plans to sort of actually develop and build more houses within the Mount Albert electorate, or is this sort of a wider Auckland thing, Jacinda?
Yeah, I think it has applications at both levels. You know, right. We've always said that, you know, we need to make the most of public transport nodes and really ensure that we're building where people are working as well. So it'll be a bit of green fields for us, but a bit of brownfield as well. You've seen in Unitech, for instance, there's a large housing development in Mount Albert going on there. What we'd be really interested in is, what are we doing to master plan that? What are we doing to make sure that we then don't unnecessarily impact on extra congestion, that we've got the schools to support that, that we've got the wastewater infrastructure? And if you're doing these large-scale developments, we want to make sure there's a master plan that sits over the whole thing. So there will be a bit of that in Mount Albert.
I think there's a lot of opportunities to improve the vibrancy and the livability of Auckland as the population grows, and definitely within the Mount Albert electorate there is opportunity for there to be more dwellings. It's a desirable place to live. That's why the average house price is over $1 million. The only way to to combat that is to enable more people to live in that part of the city. But I think the risk is, I mean, if you don't have public sector leading it, which doesn't mean that private sector won't be doing a lot of the actual building, if you don't have the city or an urban development authority doing the master planning, then it's not going to be well integrated. It's not going to be well planned for the long term.
I
agree on the master planning aspect of this. I do. Obviously, the public sector needs to coordinate this stuff. It's just the idea that the public sector needs to actually get in and bob the builder this stuff. I don't necessarily think that's the case.
It'd be a great way to get scale. I mean,
have you heard of Fletchers? Fletchers is a big
company. It's going swimmingly with them, isn't it?
Private monopoly, basically.
We actually don't have the construction industry building at the scale we need. And, you know, you have to look at our relative building supply costs when you compare to Australia are far outstrip them.
The reason they're not building at scale though is because they don't have the land, and the only way that people are talking about getting the land, I don't know if this is Labor policy, but the government the other day was talking about effectively confiscating land, you know, forced purchases off people. You know, if you get the tax system right, there will be a strong incentive to build on this land, but that just doesn't exist at the moment.
I don't disagree with that.
Jacinda, do you have anything to
add? I was just, you know, yes, it is about getting the incentives and disincentives right. But I you know, we've looked at what it's going to take to get up to the kind of scale that we need. And perhaps I'm being cynical around the idea that somehow if we just change the tax incentives, suddenly we'll see Fletchers building at an affordable rate to the degree that we need. But perhaps
public sector come in and compete with the existing duopoly would be a great way to drive efficiencies in the market. And that's what we've done, with Kiwi Bank and that, you know, small country like New Zealand. I think it is really important to have strong public sector involvement. And that's not getting rid of the market. There's still a market, but just use that lower cost of capital and long-term
vision and values lead the market.
And let me be absolutely clear, Kiwi Build as a policy for Labor was about partnering with the private sector.
Right.
But our view was that unless you came in at scale and were looking at something like 10,000 houses a year, the economies of scale of building at that level was also how we were going to try and bring prices down as well. And we're talking, you know, the $500,000 to $600,000 for a single dwelling and less for apartments.
Yeah, I mean, the risk is that you're going to crowd out the private sector though. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm all for, you know, there's lots of great models overseas of community-led developments, of, independent third sector providers building lots of houses. I just don't think that, you know, government needs to come in and do and bear this enormous risk of building all these houses when actually it's going to be the private sector doing the building anyway.
But, I mean, it has worked out in the past. I mean, some of the best houses in Auckland were state-built houses. Yep. It worked in the past. Yep. I can't say. It works overseas. Mm. In all well-functioning housing markets overseas, they have strong involvement from local government or central
government.
And
look at the way the Housing Foundation, for instance, has been able to create these shared equity schemes to try and create affordable housing. It's a model that's worked. We're looking at scaling it up.
Well, again, I disagree on the shared equity stuff. I mean, that's really just, you look at places like London, that's just actually put a fire under house prices even more. I mean, in terms of local government involvement, absolutely. I mean, on social housing, there's clearly a role for government there, but I don't think they necessarily need to be. And there are plenty of examples overseas where the government is not building, in the general market for housing either.
Now, how big is the risk they're going to crowd out the private sector? I mean, has Kiwi Bank done that to the banking sector? It has made prices a bit more competitive, but it hasn't crowded it out
unless you get rid of land banking. So the two alternatives to get rid of land banking are tax changes or forced purchasing, right?
Yep.
And you know, forced purchasing is an incredibly big sledgehammer to go wielding, you know.
I just wanted to touch on environment. So within the electorate, Westmere and the surrounding areas have like a number of polluted bays and waterways. If elected, how would you mend this, Julie?
It's a huge priority for the Green Party. We've been campaigning on water quality across the country, and certainly it's an issue in this electorate, whether it's Oakley Creek or Cox's Creek and Cox's Bay. All of the harbours are in Auckland suffer from the lack of separated water infrastructure, reticulated water supply. And so it's really important that as the population grows, we're investing in that long-term infrastructure and that we're using the latest water-sensitive design so that we're working with the environment, not just needing to build a whole lot of expensive infrastructure necessarily. We will have to build some expensive infrastructure, but there's also this really cool thing called low-impact design. And I think just making it a priority to clean up our waterways, incentivizing protecting those waterways, as well as providing the resources to local communities to be able to get in there and clean them up.
Jacinda?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be really surprising to most people that we still have a situation where wastewater to this degree is just, you know, being pumped out and stagnating in some, you know, places. Like, it is the operative word. I mean, and you have WaterCare, for instance, saying, oh, you know, it's only when we have, you know, big rain events. That is not the case. I have heard, you know, people who are live around these areas saying in some cases they see it 24/7. But this has been because we've postponed significant infrastructure needs around wastewater management on an ongoing basis for decades. And now Phil Goff's landed this on his plate, and I went in to see him, I think it was a week ago now, to say, you know, what can we do? Because as we have intensification in the central Auckland area, this potentially has the potential to get much worse, and it's becoming a blockage to us being able to build homes. You know, he's doing what he can, but ultimately, unless central government, I think, eases the pressure on some of his other infrastructure needs, unless we start partnering with him on transport, unless we give him things like regional fuel taxes to be able to cover the cost of those projects, he won't have the ability to cover the costs of wastewater treatment the way he needs to. So there is still a role for us to play in supporting council to deal with those big needs.
Yeah, Jeff?
Yeah, I totally agree with all of that. I mean, it's embarrassing to be in our country's greatest city. You know, we lecture farmers that they have to get their cows out of the waterways, and we're still dumping poo in ours. I mean, it's terrible. But just one thing to add to what the others have said, I think this is one flaw in the super city model, in that the district council and the regional council are one now. In any other part of the country, the regional council would be fining the district council and using that money to clean up those waterways. And so it would make sense for the district council to sort this problem out. That's not an issue here in the super city because they are one council. So
you could still ping WaterCare. I mean, we should be monitoring the level of their ability to manage this through proper monitoring. That got cancelled a year ago. If we reinstate that, we can hold WaterCare to task.
Yeah, an organisation taking itself to court, you know, is pretty difficult to do. I mean, I'm not saying that necessarily the super city is a bad idea, but we have to think about the governance around that stuff.
Just we're almost out of time, but I just want to lastly say, to round things up, I want to give you about 20, 30 seconds each, just to tell people, you know, what priorities and experience do you have that make you suitable for the role, and why should people vote for you? I'll start with you, Jeff.
Well, obviously, both of these people sitting next to me are wonderful people and very accomplished.
We're sitting very close to each other.
I could get an elbow somewhere bad. But, you know, they're obviously very good at their jobs. But the fact is, they're already in Parliament and will be in Parliament for the next 7 months. The people of Mount Albert have the opportunity to have a three-for-one here. They could have all three of us in Parliament representing them for the next 7 months. That would be by voting for me.
Jacinda?
Yeah, I guess this is a plug both for the local and further down the track. Yeah, I am in Parliament, but I'm not in government. And if we want to make big change, September is where that's coming. That's where our opportunity is for us to really make a difference on some of these big issues. And I'd add in there issues like child poverty as well. I'd really like to be the member, though, so I'll be in the best position possible to address things like housing, to address those issues around transport and education that we talked about, and with my children's hat on, address inequality too. But my final other plug, you know, I live locally. I'd really love to be able to work in the community that I live in
having been a MP that's been doing casework for a number of years, the thing that really matters to me as well is just being able to help people with their individual needs, and that's what electorate MPs get to do.
Yeah, Julie?
Well, I want to start by saying that I think Jacinda's a fabulous MP, and I
thanks, Julianne. Have thanks, a lot of big props.
Thanks. And I'm also standing and putting myself forward. I do feel a sense of real belonging to the Mount Albert electorate, even though I live just over the border now, because this is where I started my involvement in the Green Party. The Greens have been campaigning effectively on public transport improvements in Auckland for the last 10 years. My professional experience is in transport and urban planning, which I think is really relevant to the issues that are facing the electorate. And so that's what I have to offer.
Thank you guys so much for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.